Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So, we have apologies from EFF, Nolochungu, and the member of ANC Nkunu also has put in an apology. We then start with SAFA. The deputy chair could not, the chair actually could not be present also, but the deputy chair is going to introduce members. Over to you, deputy chair, introduce yourself first, and you can then introduce members.
Thank you, Mr. Kakana, and good morning. Thank you very much indeed to the members of the Portfolio Committee. We want to thank you, in fact, most sincerely for this opportunity to engage with the committee. I'm standing in the place of our chair today, chair of the board, and we have a delegation that I'll introduce shortly. As I understand it, this meeting is a follow-up related to the issues that were previously raised around the annual performance plan, to which SAQA has, in fact, Chair, already provided written responses to many of those issues raised. Without further ado, I'd like to actually introduce our delegation to the committee. On my right, I have Mr. Joe Samuels. Oh, I beg your pardon, Mr. Kakana. I'm rattling away. My name is Sarah Howie. I'm a professor at the University of Stellenbosch. I'm the director of the Africa Center for Scholarship and also have an affiliation with the Faculty of Education and the Center for Higher Education and Adult Education at the university. Some members will know me previously from my affiliation at the University of Pretoria, where I was there for 16 years. I was appointed Deputy Chair of the Board now about 2 years ago, and I've been serving at SAQA in that capacity since then. Proceeding to introduce the delegation, Mr. Joe Samuels is on my right, who is the CEO of SAQA, as well as we have Ms. Noreen Naidu, who's the director in the office of the CEO. I'd like to hand over to Mr. Samuels to continue with the presentation and opening remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Professor Howie. I also would like to say thank you very much for the opportunity to come back to the Portfolio Committee. The last time we didn't have quite a lot of time to address all the issues. So, in fact, we kind of skipped through the presentation. But what we've prepared, in fact, is the kind of follow-up issues that is outlined in the letter of invitation to SAQA. The topics that we're going to cover deals with the issues of articulation, the issue of simplification of the NQF, and then thirdly, the financial challenges. Chairperson, to put this in context, what I wanted to do is to outline in broad terms what it is that SAQA is doing in terms of the NQF Act. So, you know, our responsibility is to provide leadership in terms of the overseeing and implementation of the NQF. We also coordinate the three sub-frameworks that make up the NQF. We recognize professional bodies. We've got a set of policy and criteria that we need to develop in terms of the Act. We do the registration of professional designations, and then we also do the registration of qualifications and part qualifications. We keep a database of all these things so that, so in other words, we have a database of the qualifications, part qualifications, the professional bodies that we've recognized, and the part qualifications. We are also asked to verify national qualifications. In fact, there's a directive from the Department of Public Service and Administration, where there are high-level appointments being done, you know, they would ask us to verify the national qualifications of those individuals. We evaluate foreign qualifications. So if a person wants to come to have a visa to study further and so on, and has a foreign qualification, we would evaluate that. In fact, also, when South Africans study abroad and they come back, we evaluate the qualifications. And then we place them or locate them on the national qualifications framework. We do research, and in fact, the Act is saying to us that we must commission research with regard to impact of the NQF, and also, you know, do other research and so on. We've got the International Liaison Directorate that deals with international best practice and benchmarking. It liaises with NQFs across the world. And then the Act also says to us that we must do advocacy around the NQF. And then last, with regard to information and so on, we also then deal with that. So I thought it's quite an important thing to just give an overview. We don't have this slide, you know, in the pack, but we have previously, you know, gone through this. But we thought it's quite important so that members can see what we're doing. And it's all of this is in terms of the NQF Act. That we are supposed to be doing. If I then move on to articulation. Chairperson, this is also not a slide that is not in the pack, but what we thought it might be useful again for the committee that we give a kind of high-level overview of what are the kind of broad strategy that we are following with regard to articulation. So firstly, we started out by doing extensive research across the country to see what is the understanding that people have around the definition of articulation, because we go to various places and people have got different views about what this is. So we engage one of our research partners, and they then after that you know, produced a report, a definition of articulation. I'll speak about the definition in detail, but the point is really to make sure that all of us are on the same page, so the development of a definition. We then developed a baseline study to get a sense of where are we with regard to articulation, where are we now, because again, I think, you know, there are different views that has been, you know, been expressed. In particular, when we did the baseline study, we looked particularly at the articulation between TVET colleges and universities of technology, because you know, that is the area that the minister has outlined to say that this is quite an important area. We then brought stakeholders together to develop a common understanding, taking into consideration the articulation definition, the information around the baseline study, and to develop a strategy going forward to create a culture of articulation. Then, fourthly, we also address blockages as we become aware of it. And yeah, it is not that we are, you know, waiting for people to complain about the stuff, but, you know, we also, during the research, identify what are some of the systemic issues. But also, from time to time, there are individuals that that are struggling with particular things, and then we take it up in different kinds of ways. And then we are busy now with conducting in-depth analysis of the various learning pathways, and we are then saying, so this is where we are now, you know, where do we want to be in 10, 20 years' time and so on, and what are the kinds of things that we need to put in place in order to get there? So it is both a kind of proactive way of trying to deal with it, looking at blockages now and so on. So that is the overall idea. The next set of slides go then into the detail, and we thought that it's quite important that we, you know, give members this overview. So what is the definition that we are using? We are saying that articulation is the process of forming possibilities of connection between qualifications and or part qualifications to allow for the vertical, the lateral and diagonal movement of learners through the formal education and training system and its linkages with the world of work. So it is a fairly comprehensive definition that we have adopted. Now, articulation then also happens on three levels. It happens at the systemic level, so this is based on the legislation, national policy and formal requirements within education and training. And it's about this idea of systemically a joined up system. Then when we speak about specific articulation, we are talking here about arrangement that has been made at the institutional level between institutions. And then thirdly, we're also saying that although you have things at the systemic level and at the specific level, individuals find different kinds of ways to maneuver and so on. And we then, you know, say we must also focus on the individual. So it is focusing on all of those three levels. And it is quite useful, I think, sometimes to say exactly, you know, when one talks about there's no articulation, because we often hear that, what is it that we're talking about? You know, so that we can really analyze this thing and so that we can follow it up, you know, to try to see how do we, you know, how do we sort, you know, through this. Sorry, just go back. Let me give an example. We often hear the thing that there is no articulation between with the NCV qualification, for example. Now, what does that mean? Because on the one hand, at the systemic level, the minister has got clear policy, a clear thing to say, that if you get the NCV at level 4, these are the kind of pass requirements, and then you should be allowed into a higher education institution. So that at the systemic level is there, it is exists. But the problem is that it doesn't get implemented across the university system. In some cases it gets implemented, in other cases not. And therefore, from an analytical perspective, it's quite important to understand what the problem is. And I'll come back to that, because the main problem, as far as our analysis goes, is that some universities don't trust the quality, you know, of the stuff that comes through. So then what you need to do then, you need to deal with quality issues. You don't go into trying to solve the systemic stuff, because it's there, you know. So that's why it's quite important that you must have a clear analysis of what the problem might be. In other cases, it might be that there's an individual that goes to an institution and the institution says, no, I don't want, you know, we're not going to allow you into this and that. And it's quite important, again, to understand that and to understand what is the policy of the institution itself and is it against national policy and so on. You know, so it's really important to understand what the problem is that we are faced with. Okay. Now, the Minister of Higher Education and Training published in January 2017, the articulation policy. We think that it's a well-articulated, you know, it is a well-articulated system, is one in which there are linkages between the different parts, and the Minister states there that there should be no silos or dead ends, you know, in the policy. Next slide. So the policy stipulates the following barriers: academic qualifications considered more credible than vocational and occupational qualifications. Now, I must say this is a deep problem, you know, in our society. You know, if I think about my own children, you know, when people come to visit, they always ask, now, what university are you going to? You know, they don't ask them, you know, what vocation are you going to take or whatever the case might be. And my own son had lots of difficulties. He passed with a bachelor's pass. And then people say to him, are you not going to university? He said, no, he wants to become a sound engineer. you know. And so we went on that particular route. It was difficult. So I'm just saying that this is a, it's a very deep thing and so on. And the point I think that I often make is that we need to talk about societal change in terms of this. And then if you want to bring the whole society on board, it is not the easy thing. And in fact, some people try to do it by doing mass awareness campaigns and so on. Now, the point is, and I'm going to get to that later on, that I'm confronted on a number of occasions where people are saying, but this one doesn't know this, or that one doesn't know this, and so on. I mean, we simply don't have the kind of budget to run, you know, this huge public campaign, you know, that is required to change the view, you know, of people around this idea. There's perceptions around the purpose and the nature of technical and vocational education and training. One of my Sunday things is to kind of go through the newspaper. And then I look and I see how people advertise jobs and so on, and whether they require, you know, particular vocational qualifications and so on. And I must tell you, if one looks in general, what it is that people are requiring or looking for is academic qualifications. Again, what we need to do, and we've been doing it, you know, with the possibilities that we have and the potential that we have, is to engage, in fact, with industry and so on. Say to them, you have developed these qualifications yourself. So just ask for those qualifications as a requirement in your adverts. We have been working with professional bodies, in fact, to try to deal with them, you know, in that particular way. And so, you know, there is a shift that is happening, but it is slowly, you know. Societal change sometimes happens slowly. There's also the absence of robust articulation arrangements. And the study that we will talk about, you know, again, you know, points to that we've made some progress, but, you know, more needs to be done. Dead-end qualifications. I think in some cases there are qualifications that comes to an end naturally, and we need to find ways in which it can connect. But what we have tried to do over the last, certainly for me, over the last 20 years, is we've always tried to make sure that if there's one qualification, that people must outline where it is that the person will go to the next one. However, you can build that in policy and so on, but on the ground is another thing. You know, and that is, I think, where most of the difficulties is that we are encountering. Inadequate coherence between sub-frameworks. You know, I'll show you, you know, that the area that we have got, where we actually need to pay attention to much more, and that we need to work much more at, is when people move from the workplace or occupational qualifications, you know, into higher education. That is where the, you know, the stuff is. And then lack of institutional flexibility to support learners. And again, you know, there's a number of examples around that. Now, the question is, how do you change that? You change that by, you know, changing people's attitude, their behavior, and so on. Because if already the policy stuff is in place, you know, that is the kind of next level. The principles outlined by the policy. The minister's policy has adopted the way in which we have seen the definition, and I'm very happy that, you know, that it has been taken up in that way in the policy. It says that the articulation must meet economic needs, it must address lifelong learning. It needs to ensure accessibility of the system. It then talks about ensure programmatic rather than institutional articulation. And yes, of course, I mean, you know, one can't argue against that. It must ensure redress, equity, and inclusiveness, promote the value of learning outcomes achieved through different routes equally. And it must be done by design, so people must sit and they must say, when I develop this qualification, where is this the next one, and so on. You know, what are the linkages? It must be a conscious thing. It can't just be that you develop one qualification and you don't think about the learning pathway. It must include credible and fair procedures and practices to validate the learning. We can speak a little bit about that more in detail later on. But these are the principles that say. The policy also outlines SAQA's role. So what it is that we need to do, we need to determine articulation criteria after consultation with the quality councils. We need to ensure that all registered qualifications have articulation pathways, and I'm saying we've been doing that for years. It is there. The problem is implementation. Provide leadership on this stuff. I think, you know, you will see in terms of the baseline study and the other work that we do provide that. We report to the minister on implementation on an annual basis. We need to resolve certain challenges. And then, of course, we need to advise the minister. The minister wrote us a letter last week, got it with the minister saying, please advise us in terms of the TVET system. And the minister raises a number of issues in terms of that. And yes, you know, we will be meeting with the quality councils to set this up and so that we can give the minister advice with regard to this. And then coordinate the work of the quality council to make sure that, you know, there isn't too many fights. Sorry, there should be no conflict. Now, so just to give you a kind of sense, so this is the baseline study. I'm not going to deal with every slide, but, you know, to just give you a kind of sense about where we are in terms of this. Now, what was the purpose? It was to identify, analyze, and document good practice models and relationship for learner transition. So it was about saying, well, you know, what is happening? What are the good practices? And that we then, understanding what the good practices are, we can then begin to promote that and say to the other institutions, please, you know, do it like this. To identify and explore the potential for developing collaborative models in three types of scenarios, and then identify the nature of activities and support that institutions, staff, and learners need for successful transitioning from, you know, from the ones to the other. So what did we do? We then did a survey questionnaire administered to 26 public higher education institutions and 50 TVET colleges. The response was absolutely fantastic in the sense that the 26 HEIs responded and 49 of the TVET colleges responded. So it is a 98 response that we got through this. So I want to say that, you know, with the kind of participation that we had, this must give us as a country a very good sense of what is happening, you know, at the level where the stuff matters and so on. And I think this is a commitment, you know, certainly that SAQA has got to evidence-based policy and policy-making and so on. So what is the summary of the findings? We found that when it comes to articulation arrangements, that there were 8 arrangements out of the 25 HEs where there's no articulation arrangement. Then there were formal arrangements, 17 colleges have it added, and 11 HEIs. There were informal arrangements between 25 colleges reported on that and 6 HEIs. And then, you know, there were 7 that said that both formal and informal arrangements. So the formal types of arrangements, and you can, I mean, you can go through it. It gives one a kind of good sense, you know, of what the nature is of the arrangements that people do. Next slide, please. Then we also looked at whether there are formal policies in place with regard to articulation management practices. We see formal policies in 14 Tibet colleges, 17 HEIs, informal arrangements 7 and 4, formal and informal 15 and 1, and no policies 13 Tibet colleges and 3 HEIs. What are some of the challenges? The kind of key challenges there is student support and student issues. So if one then looks across the system, you know, one will see, you know, that certainly one needs to look at this whole thing about student support. Workplace issues, because it's then the relationship between the TVET and the workplaces and so on. You would see, again, it's the area that you know, people are reporting on resources, you know, even we complain about resources. Now the next challenge is the relationship between HEIs and TVET colleges. In fact, a lot of the TVETs are saying that universities don't necessarily understand the TVET sector. They also say that they've got a negative attitude towards the TVET college sector. I think they call it, I mean, you know, people use big words, epistemic injustices, I think is the word that's Then there are issues at the institutional systems and structures level, and then also issues around curriculum issues between colleges and HEIs. And here I think this is where the issues about quality and all of those kinds of stuff comes, or perceived quality, you know, saying, well, the stuff coming from you is not the best in the world, and, you know, so there's a number of those things that people have mentioned. Now, then we wanted to look at, you know, the issues about is it successful, what is not successful, and so on, to get a better idea, as I said earlier about, you know, looking at what are some good models that we can. And you would see there that in the responses we got from the TVET colleges, 11 said it was, their stuff was unsuccessful, modestly successful, 21. And that is the most, you know, there were 8 that said, you know, we are successful, and 1 that says we are highly successful. Next slide, please. Then the other issue is the issue about tracking students. So we asked the question, which of the institutions have got tracking mechanisms in place? And only 28 colleges said that they are tracking mechanisms in place. 8 HEIs said that they have tracking mechanisms in place. So you have then 43% or 21 colleges said they don't have, and 17 HEIs that they didn't have tracking things in place. So, I mean, one of the proposals that we're making later on is to say that, you know, it is quite important that, you know, that one puts these things in place so that you know, what is happening to the learners and so on. Next slide. So when we look at then at what were the monitoring and reporting, the monitoring and tracking arrangements that was reported, you would see that the TVET's tracking students through the levels of their qualifications, you know, and the colleges and the HEIs, there were 19 of them, then the HEIs tracking students from access through to mainstream qualifications, and then eventually graduation. There was 1 tracking students from TVET colleges articulating into universities of technology was 1 tracking transitioning students by HEI faculty management 2 and then the regular HEI enrollment planning targets to DHED was 1. So So it seems to me, if one looks at all of this without going into the detail, that one would have to encourage people to track. Okay, next. This is then also to look at, you know, if you look at transitioning students, how many institutions are doing that, and you can again look at the numbers. It is low. We also then try to find out, okay, so what is the lack, the reasons for the lack of tracking and monitoring of student transitioning? So the reason that was given, so it is not that we have made this up, this is what we were told. Not the way of tracking, although, you know, someone says, well, I'm not the way of tracking here, but, you know, but I believe it should be done. So that's one. The absence of tracking is due in large part to non-capturing of TVET college articulation information in the registration process. So again, the question is, you know, we can advise and we can say, please, you know, can you try and do this here? And of course, when you look at that, people will also say to you, you know, if you come now and you ask us to do additional things, then it means, you know, we need to have the resources to do so. The higher education data analyzer can provide the data for a cohort of students that articulated from a TVET college. So we got two responses. Most institutions said there was no formal tracking of articulation to another organization. I'm not sure whether that's a reason, but... but in general, the point for me is that it seems to me that this is an area that one wants to, you know, encourage people to do some work. Then successes and challenges. So what's the finding? We also asked the institutions to report, so what are the learning pathways? So if one takes N426, that a pathway exists now. Let me just say, when I talk about this, I'm not saying all of these things are working 100%. But those pathways exist, so from N4, people are able to go and they can do the trade test, as reported to us by this institution. People do N426 and then they go to the workplace. There's also vertical articulation within the sub-framework where they go on and they do a national diploma. And they also go on to do an advanced diploma. Then from 426, people do a national N diploma. And then, you know, there's vertical articulation to HIE studies and so on. Now, again, I want to say, in terms of the whole issue about the N6 and the N diploma, a few years ago, the late Feroz Patel, you know, came to us and said, look, we actually need to make a statement around that, which we did. But making a statement is one thing, you know. You know, we also tried to intervene in different kind of spaces around this, but this problem seems to be coming up again and again, you know, so... We would have to find other ways of, you know, making clear what, you know, what the kind of structural arrangements is, you know, around this matter. But the point that I'm wanting to make is that exists, and in fact, some institutions, you know, they allow for those to happen. And of course, you know, all of these things link into the workplace. So, if we then look at the three types of articulation scenarios, so we then find that there are developed articulation scenarios that exist. Then there are those that started and that are emerging, so we're calling it emerging articulation scenarios. And this wonderful term, when we discussed this with our research team, said, no, what does latent mean? It says, no, you see, there are one or two people that are trying to do things, or, you know, or things started and then the person left and so on. So it is there, it must just be picked up again. So that's the idea around latent. But I think overall the point that one wants to make here And the recommendation that we're making is that there should be, in our view, formal articulation arrangements between institutions. So that's, I mean, in essence. So having looked at what are some of the issues, what are some of the problems and so on, we then develop a set of what we call enablers that will assist with articulation. The first big one is that we are saying that our institutions should learn to work together better. We should try to work together. And then there's been a number of things. So, for example, we must respect motives across institutions and purposes of different qualifications and programs. Because sometimes I think, you know, when somebody says something and, you know, it's a little bit different, and, you know, so what people tend to do, they tend to question, you know, other people's motives and so on. You know, listen carefully, nicely to what people are saying. And let's find ways. You know, South Africans are great with doing that. So we should remind ourselves of it. We also need to understand the qualifications, the learners, the programs across the institutions. And once we understand, you know, what are the kind of purposes, what was intended and so on, you know, then one can work a little bit better together. One of the programs, I think, that we have seen that is successful was, I mean, a university took the initiative and brought all the TVET colleges, you know, in that one province together. And then set up, you know, a relationship with the colleges and with the university. And so to try to deal with some of the curriculum issues, you know, they got these groups of curriculum teams to work together and so on. And then the commitment was, if you accept a student and the student comes through your system, that student will be recognized, the qualification will be recognized by the university. Fantastic model, you know, and I think the point for me is, we can and we should encourage, you know, more like that. So that was, you know, a very interesting kind of one. Then also, we must make sure that people understand the different learning pathways, you know, that exist and so on. And then an exercise that the higher education people are doing, the CH are doing, is to align the offerings, you know, of the HEQSF. And they hope to have this thing done by 2019, I think, is the kind of cut-off date that they are proposing. So the point here is about, you know, we need to improve working together. And I mean, the kind of slogan that's around is working together, you can do so much more. Next slide. And enabler number two, one also needs to take into consideration the roles of the various other entities that is surrounding this, you know, the learning pathway enterprises. You know, there's been, in some cases, the province has played a very important role in bringing the institutions together. And to say to the institutions, this is what this province wants to achieve. So come now, TVET colleges and the universities in this province, let us work together, you know, and then brought them together, facilitated, you know, the conversations between that. So, employers and workplaces, NGOs and so on, I mean, you know, there are various different, very nice interventions that people have made. And so we are saying also, let us encourage all these other players to, you know, to play a role. So if in the Western Cape, for example, you know, the questions about climate change, water scarcity and so on, you know, what prevents the province from bringing all those role players together? I mean, you know, there are wonderful universities here. There are wonderful colleges and so on. You know, to say this is what we would like to see. This is what we would like to do and so on. So we are saying that this can and should be enabled. Then it's quite important that that agreements, you know, gets formalized, where it's agreements in terms of place reservation, credit accumulation and transfer between institutions, recognition of prior learning so that we don't duplicate and waste the kind of knowledge, skills and so on that people have. And we argue that we should rather look at how we can make it possible, you know, rather than to say, no, it is not possible. This will never work. I often hear that, both in my institution and other places. No, this will never work. And people haven't even engaged with the ideas. So we say, please, you know, make a formal agreement so that everyone is on one stream in terms of what needs to be done. Enabler number four, we make the argument that the university should have inclusive admission criteria and they should admit learners with the N4 to N6 and of course, you know, the diploma stuff, the NCV, the National Senior Certificate. And there's a huge pool of people that are 23 years and older where they have no level 4 qualification. Now, I also understand from the colleagues in our university sector that says, you know, if we just take the 18-year-old that comes through the system, there's enough to fill up all the spaces. You know, so I'm saying, you know, again for me, one is to listen to, you know, what people are saying around that. But also, you know, from the department, from the white paper, it says that we would like to have more people in TVET colleges and so on. So that if that is where people need to go, or we want people to go, then we must build incentives into that system, you know, so that they can be taken up. And we need to build incentives into the workplaces so that people can go. So, you know, so the point for me is that we must make sure that we do have, you know, that we're inclusive rather than exclusive. Number five, the quality of teaching and learning. It is a huge issue, and as I said already, there are perceptions. Whenever I go to different kind of places, people tell me how bad the end courses are. There are other people that say to me how good it is and so on. You know, so we will now pay more attention to this when we advise the minister accordingly. Of course, the point is that underneath that is the issues about learner support, and we heard earlier that institutions told us that, you know, that the support is not what it ought to be. The scaffolding of learning, content of learning between the various learner offerings and so on. You know, again, it's about this idea of saying, so where is this learner going to go to? Let's make sure that they've got the right content and stuff to be able to move. And then, of course, there's the issues about learner achievement level. Enabler number six, we are saying it's very important that we take this idea of career development advice very, very seriously. The Department of Higher Education has got a wonderful program dealing with career development advice. But that should also run through the schools, and it should run through the TVET colleges and so on, so that at all of these kind of places, that people do get the right advice. So again, the experience here is that you must try to get the best advice that you can. And, you know, we must make sure that people are in a position to give, you know, the learners the best advice. And when I say learners, I'm talking not only about people in schools, 18-year-olds and so on, I'm talking about lifelong learners, adults and so on as well. And therefore it speaks about that all transition points. Enabler number seven, articulation focused on particular learning pathways and so on. So again, you know, we need to look at what are the learning pathways. And so what we're doing at the moment, as I said, is we are analyzing what are the pathways, you know, so that we can make that information available, you know, to the various institutions. Okay, so those are the enablers. Now, these are the kind of recommendations. So the first one is identify, further investigate, and document the key enablers of successful developed articulation models, and I think the baseline study has given us a good sense of that. But their point is also, as new ones come on board, that we again look and document that and spread the good news. These are the kinds of stuff that we can do. Next one. Host national learning events, for example, research seminars, colloquia, conferences to promote system-wide sharing and learning. And as I said, we had one event, and I will talk a little bit about that. But we are also now planning a bigger kind of conference looking at learning pathways. On the 4th and the 5th, we are bringing people together, focusing on community development engineering and early childhood development, as a kind of the first three of these kind of broad learning pathways that we focus on. Now, you would ask me, so why on early childhood development? I mean, my view, in fact, is that if we get the early childhood development stuff right, you know, it has got lots of spin-offs later on. Community development, there is such a lot of things that needs to be done. And, our community development workers, in fact, need to be supported, and there must be clear learning pathways and so on. And engineering, I don't have to say anything. I mean, you know the importance thereof. Recommendation three, that articulation involving workplaces, that we must establish articulation champions with institutions, so that they can say, these are the kind of ways, this is what we can do. Then we must build capacity for work-integrated learning. So there must be coordinators. In fact, when we did the research, we saw that where there were these offices in place, it worked much better, because that is part of, having these formal kind of arrangements. And they look after the agreements with the workplace and with other institutions and so on. And then develop and sustain entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship hubs. I think some colleges are very good in actually setting up these particular things and so on. Now, the research team also said to me that they are very worried that they are seeing that, some of these offices are beginning to disappear, so we actually need to, intervene, fairly quickly in terms of that. Then, recommendation four, design a campaign to develop collaborative relations and communities of practice, both provincially as well as nationally, we are trying to do it. As I said, the next big event that we're going to have is to bring all the people involved with these kinds of relationships, in next year. We must advance the collaborative models in the three types of articulation scenarios, in systemic ways, systematic ways. Next. Number six, focus on particular learning pathways. And then next one. Then develop national systemic reporting requirements and guidelines for institutions to track and to report on articulation practices. I've spoken quite a lot about that, so let me not. Now, so this was the seminar that we had on articulation on the 30th of June, January 2018. And this was the statement that was accepted, by the conference delegates. So the first statement is to say, yes, we take note of the achievements. We take note of what was the sentiment expressed in the white paper, that we should focus on systemic and specific articulation to enhance learner movement, Noreen, just go back, into and through institutions of learning and into the workplace. And then the understanding of articulation, next, go on. And then, what the delegate then agreed is that we must encourage and promote the development and implementation of formal articulation agreements to create a culture of articulation within and across learning and work, where formal agreements supplement NCAF legislation and are aligned with this legislation. The second one talks about the collaborative relationships needed between the various bodies. And then thirdly, to commit to the quality of teaching and learning and quality scaffolding of the curriculum, including quality provision quality learner achievements and quality learner support and advice to address the interrelated system institutional gaps which may be hampering articulation. So that was, you know, the kind of the delegates coming to this and making this statement clear. So the point for us now, it's about, you know, how do we start it and how do we actually ensure that this this movement grows, that becomes aware of this. Now, the other set of slides deals with specifically now looking at the national certificate vocational, but this falls within this the realm of individual pathways. So what we did was we analyzed the information that we have on the National Learner Record Database. And already we've got on that database over 18 million individuals and 18 million achievements and about 16 million individuals. This looks at the data from 2009 and it's up to 2016. So we looked at the number of learners who's got the NCV 4, which is, you know, NCF level 4. And you can see there's a steady increase in the numbers. Now, some people might say, yeah, I can see there's an increase, but, you know, it is not as quick, you know, and so on. And I often say, you know, if you have a system that delivers steady growth, you're on the right track. You know, quick fixes sometimes doesn't work. There are more women than men that have got this stuff. And 89% is African. Next. This gives us a sense of, you know, what are the various areas, and you can see office administration is right at the top. Electrical infrastructure construction is number two and so on. Next slide. These are the areas over the top five, so it's business, commerce, management studies, then FET general services, physical planning, construction, and manufacturing, engineering, technology. And then, you know, the kind of numbers. Next slide. Now, this slide then also looks at so these holders, what, you know, what other qualifications do they have, you know, when we did the analysis? So in other words, let me just use the example of NCF level 8. So in other words, this person has got an NCV level 4, and then the person went on to get other qualifications, or the 12 has got other qualifications, including the NCF level 8 qualification. So there's been, you know, there's been kind of progression from the point that they had the NCV. Okay. Next. This is a kind of analysis about saying, so where do these people go to? Do they go to, you know, the private institution, public institution? Do they go to a public comprehensive university, a public traditional university, a university of technology? It also looks at, if you look at the 45,000 learners, we have obtained 67,000 qualifications. This analysis says that 56% of them have got a single qualification, 40% two qualifications, 3% three, and so on. So it again gives you the kind of, you know, the pathway stuff, which we'll go to the next slide. And these are the kind of pathways, you know, these are the patterns that we are picking up. So so you would see there, the first pattern is, you know, the person has got a NEC at level 4, and then the person goes to and do an NCV. So in this case, it is a kind of, it's a horizontal shift that the person has made. I'll talk about career advice again, but if one looks at this, some of these pathways, I mean, you know, the question for me is, why did people do this? What was the kind of blockages in the system, perhaps? Or did the person shift from this to that? You know, so because this is a I mean, it is an analysis in terms of looking at the database. It is not, we can't tell the stories of the individuals that have done these kinds of stuff. But these are the kind of patterns that we see that emerge. Next slide. Again, you know, this is again, you know, you can see the kind of pattern that has been followed. Next slide. So what are the top learning pathways? What we have done here, we again looked at the NLRD through the NCAS levels from 95 to 2014. And why we're doing this, because in 1995 we didn't have a national qualifications framework because only the legislation was passed in 95. So it gives one a sense of what has been happening, you know, in the democratic era, for the lack of a better word. These are actual numbers that you see, and we have done it in terms of the NQF. So the purple colored section is the general and further education and training qualification sub-framework. The yellow is the higher education qualification sub-framework, and the green from level 1 to 8 is the occupational qualifications framework. Okay, so if one looks at that, you can quite clearly see, if one looks at the numbers, and the levels and so on, that people are moving. You can also see that sometimes people are at level 4 and then they go back, you know, to level 1 on the OQSF. And then you can also see there's a large number of people at level NCAF level 4, you know, that there is and so on. Next slide, please. Just go to the next one because this... Now, in that first one that I showed you, you would see that there wasn't the arrow that moved from the occupational qualification sub-framework into higher education. You can't see it. Because at this level, with the big numbers that we have used, I think the analysis used something like 12 million learners, you know, to give this kind of picture. When one goes to the early childhood development, you can see that there's one little arrow that moves from level 4 to level 6. So that is a pathway there that they've been able to establish. So the reason why we are going into, you know, we're looking at each of the fields now is to see what is it that those people have done there and what is it that they can teach, you know, others to say, you know, these are possibilities that one can create here. Sorry, just stay for the moment. In 1994, 95, early childhood development was not, there weren't qualifications there. So, I often say to the people in early childhood development, if they want to tell a story, they've got a very good story to tell. If you look at what it is that they've been able to achieve over the last 20 years, in terms of qualifications, pathways, and so on. Next slide. Simplification of the NQF, I'm now going to hand over to Navin.
Good morning, everyone. I'm just going to give Joe a break for a little bit and give you a change of voice for now and talk about simplification of the NQF. This came about from a ministerial guideline that said that SACWA and the quality councils must look at simplifying the NQF. So the SACWA board in 2016 defined what we mean by simplification of the NQF. And they came up with the following. They said that simplification means clarifying and communicating concepts in an understandable and appropriate language, eliminating red tape from policies and processes, preventing unnecessary duplication and proliferation of qualifications, correctly allocating qualifications to the three sub-frameworks, and then identifying systemic gaps and addressing them. What's then done is we developed an action plan that speaks to these deliverables. And on an annual basis, we report to the minister to say, what is it that we've done in terms of these particular areas? So we submitted our second action, second report to the minister in April this year. In terms of the first one, on clarifying concepts and communicating effectively, here we have a subcommittee of the CEO committee. Now, the CEO committee is made up of SACWA and the Quality Council, and by invitation, DHET and DBE as well. And in this committee, we discuss issues that cut across the NQF implementation. Now, a subcommittee was established of this committee that focuses on advocacy and communications. And a lot of the infographics that we've developed comes from this subcommittee. So in this committee, we focus on clarifying the concepts and communicating this in a simple manner. And we've done this in different ways. We developed a booklet on terminology called the NQFpedia, and we've run workshops for the NQF family, so with the Quality Councils, with the DHET as well, where we explain what these concepts mean and how they should be applied, so that we hope that we can have a common language across all our policies. We also have various exhibitions where we mainly interact with policy beneficiaries as well as policy implementers. In the last financial year, for example, we reached 10,400 policy beneficiaries through our exhibitions. We also promote the NQF terminology on social media platforms, so we would have a term for a week or a term for the month. For the year, we did 37 NQF terms, which goes out on our social media platforms, and we say, did you know that this is what, you know, it means, RPL means, for example, or we put out our infographic. And in that way, we try and generate interest in what we are saying, but also communicate the messages that we want to communicate. We recorded 45,833 impressions during that campaign. I'm just looking at NQF terminology. We also provide information to our stakeholders, and we responded to something like 80,324 inquiries regarding issues around the NQF for the last financial year. In terms of the policies that we've reviewed, now this is our attempt to remove red tape to ensure that there's common language and common understanding across the policies. What we had to do in the last financial year is to relook at our policy for recognizing professional bodies and registering professional development, registering professional designations. And in particular, we had to deal with the issue of derecognition of a professional body. And that means that if the professional body does not meet our requirements any longer, we have to have a mechanism in place that says you are not meeting our criteria and therefore you will no longer be recognized by SACWA. And we have actually done that. So we had to change our policy and our procedure to allow for that to happen. We also introduced a policy and criteria, or we amended our policy and criteria for the evaluation of foreign qualifications. In particular, we had to find mechanisms to deal with foreign institutions that are not situated in a particular country per se, but they operate in an international environment. So how do we deal with those? Because it didn't quite fit the original definition. And that's what we've done there. We are also currently working on the RPL policy to try and make sure that it aligns with the minister's policy. In terms of preventing the proliferation of qualifications, what we do there is every 3 years, we ask the quality councils to recommend for qualifications to be re-registered on the NQF. So every 3 years, the UMALUSI as well as the CHE will recommend qualifications for re-registration, and then they will also tell us which qualifications will be deregistered. Every 5 years, we the QCTO will do this, exactly the same exercise. Now, in this way, we are trying to remove qualifications that no longer meet the policy and criteria for registration, and also to replace them with new qualifications that come along. And at the moment, we are working with the CAG to deregister all the non-aligned qualifications. So these are qualifications that were registered under the SACWA Act that do not meet the current requirements and are either being they're being phased out and replaced by new qualifications. So that should be done by December 2019. Then in terms of the correct allocation of qualifications to the various sub-frameworks, that exercise was done and qualifications were allocated to the various sub-frameworks. Then there were qualifications that are now we are looking at deregistering by December 2019. Those have not all been allocated to sub-frameworks currently because we're looking at phasing them out. The team is also looking at dealing with the matter of a small number of qualifications that are currently sitting on the wrong sub-framework and they need to be reallocated. So there's a task team that has been set up to look at that issue. In terms of identifying systemic gaps and trying to address them, the CEO committee that I've mentioned earlier has set up a number of task teams that investigate systemic gaps and then they make recommendations on how these gaps should actually be closed. So for example, we've had a task team that looked at the accreditation of level 5 qualifications and they made their recommendations, so that the work of that task team has now come to an end. We also looked at foreign qualifications that are offered in South Africa, and at our last meeting earlier this month, the task team made their recommendations, so their work is now done, and we are looking at how do we implement that. We've set up a new task team to look at South African qualifications that are being offered outside the borders of South Africa and what that would mean. And we recently held an NQF implementation workshop for the NQF family. And coming out of that workshop, there was a need to establish an NQF operations task team, which actually looks at the blockages and how do we actually implement the Act across and how do we ensure that we all have the same understanding of implementation of the Act as well. So that task team is just newly formed and will commence work by the end of September. And lastly, we established a task team that will look at implementing the Minister's articulation policy and report back on progress there. So what does all of this mean for our post-school education and training sector? So I try to link it back to the definition as per the SACWA board. So in terms of clarifying and communicating concepts, we say that policy beneficiaries, implementers, and policy makers understand NQF terminology and policy implications much better. And also policies across the system are coherent and understandable. That will make it easier for implementation, and it will also allow much better movement through the system. In terms of reducing duplication and the proliferation of qualifications, here qualifications and part qualifications that do not meet the policy and criteria are removed from the system, and they will be replaced by new qualifications that will meet the requirements. In that way, we can ensure that there's articulation, and because SACWA will not register any qualification that does not show an articulation pathway. Then in terms of removing systemic gaps, these blockages are dealt with as they become issues, and when we have individual issues that are raised, we try and resolve that issue and then look at how do we deal with this on a more systemic level. What are the things that we need to put in place to ensure that we don't have this problem recur? And that's something that we're working with on a daily basis. We are also addressing these systemic gaps through ensuring that all qualifications and part qualifications have these articulation options. And in terms of the correct allocation of qualifications to the sub-frameworks, we are working together to ensure that new qualifications replacing the non-aligned qualifications are all registered by December 2019 where possible. We know that the CAG has already alerted us that they're expecting this huge bubble of qualifications, applications that they will receive. And we have committed to them that we will make our resources available to try and help push as much through the system as possible, but making sure that we meet the quality criteria. We're not going to let something through if we're not satisfied that it meets our quality criteria. Thank you. I'll hand back to Joe.
Sorry. Joe, how many minutes are you still needing? Because
I'm going to be short.
No, no.
How many minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then that's the end of the presentation.
That's correct. Chairperson, the third thing that I need to address is the committee asked about funding challenges. So, Chair, if we go back. Chair, these are the questions that the Portfolio Committee has raised with SACWA. We have submitted written reply to a number of these issues. So I really just want to go through it very quickly. However, I mean, the first thing, which is a bit of an update, is that we had a meeting with the Minister of Higher Education and Training, where the chairperson and myself met with the minister and with members of the Department of Higher Education. There were seven things that we, seven recommendations that we've made. The first one was that the minister is responsible for setting up, NPF forum. In fact, it's chaired by the DG. Now, previously, this forum, did not meet for a number of years. And we asked the minister to please convene this. The minister responded very quickly and convened the meeting. We had the first meeting, it was in July, we had the meeting in July, and again, it's positive. There's a next meeting that is scheduled for the 26th of September, so we are very happy with the responsiveness from the minister and the DG. Then, Chairperson, we asked the minister to consider this idea of a legal fund because, we are told by the lawyers that, a lot of them want to specialize in education because there are so many different laws and it is and things are not very clear. So, and people have discovered, and I think a very good thing, their voice and so on, and they, take us to lawyers and all of those wonderful things and so on. But, I mean, the point is that it is the fees are just exorbitant. For example, I mean, previously, SACWA, we didn't spend, our expenditure in terms of legal fees was less than 500,000 rand, well below that. But the last 2 years, there was the previous financial year, this is now 16-17, it went up to something like 700,000, and 17-18, it was in the region of about 3 million. And the main source of that, it had nothing to do with misrepresentation of qualifications, but the two things, it was about accreditation and the issues around accreditation, particularly in the, in the kind of schooling stroke private provider setting. And the other thing is that with us taking on the responsibility of recognizing professional bodies, there are more than one professional body very often, that's operating in a particular area. Now, and then people fight with each other. And when they fight, they draw us into this particular stuff and so on. And then, of course, we need to get legal advice to make sure that, we deal with the stuff properly. So that has been the main cause of, the legal costs going up. And so we said to the minister, please, This is an area, in fact, the CHE also had raised the matter at the CO committee and was saying that particularly with quite a lot of number of private providers and so on, you know, they need to get, they are often involved with, you know, with cases and so on. So we were talking about an overall fund for all the NPF bodies. Next. We put forward a proposal around the digitization of learner records. Again, with assistance from the department in terms of the digitization, we got a small funding from a Belgian donor, and we are busy now finalizing that. There's quite a lot of other records that still needs to happen. The other quality councils got money from the NSF, you know, that kind of thing. Next. We were also saying that one of the things that we can do to speed up and cut out some of the red tape and so on is to have a tracking system for the registration of qualifications and the accreditation of learning programs. And we put forward this idea of putting together a you know, some kind of software that people can track the stuff and they can clearly see where it is and so on. And all of us can see where the stuff is in the system. So the department is looking for to investigate donor funding for that. In terms of recognition of prior learning, at that stage, the department and through Shirley's office, you know, has been fulfilling the RTL coordinating mechanism and so on. We said that we're willing to do that, and the minister said she will apply her mind to it. You know, Shirley did come back to me to say that, you know, that going forward there might be, in terms of phase two, you know, that it might, you know, that could be considered to you know, to move to SACPA and so on. I must also say that, you know, the first meeting of the reference group happened and we hosted the meeting at SACPA. So, you know, there's good movement in terms of that. Next. Chairperson, you know, the minister asked SACPA to give advice with regard to articulation ombud function, which we did, and we brought this now, because we had three ministers in a short while, so we brought this to this minister's attention, and the minister said she will investigate and get back to us around this. Next slide. We also had a vacancy on the SACPA board, and we brought this again to the minister's attention, and again, the minister, I think, was very responsive. And already there's a nomination out, there's a call for nomination that is out. So I must say I'm very happy with the responsiveness of our Prime Minister. Next slide. Then we brought the issue of funding to the Minister's attention. Our request really is not to have for donor funding and all of that. We really want to have increase on our baseline budget. Now, at the beginning, I spoke about all the functions that gets that we do. There are two of those things that are cost recovery. The others, you know, comes from the fiscus. And so we are saying, please, you know, increase our baseline funding. The minister said she will have a discussion and so on, and she'll get back to us on that. Now, the questions raised by the committee, which we responded to. So the question, first one, does the implementation of the ADIS Convention, would this have financial implications? We said, you know, there are some things that we're doing at the moment, but there are some things that the ADIS Convention is asking us also to consider, which is, you know, areas of RPL, for example. So we are saying that if that's the case, then, you know, we may need to have some
what
support.
Is
RPL.
Yeah.
Recognition of prior learning. We also said that the ADIS Convention also says that we need to treat refugees and asylum seekers in particular kinds of ways. It will mean that we would have to develop those mechanisms, and also recognizing partial studies. So we're saying that those are the areas that we would have to develop going forward. Next. in terms of programs that would be affected by underfunding in 2018-19, and you know, we have outlined all the kind of the processes. I don't want to go into detail around that. I think, you know, it gives you a sense of what it is that we would like to be able to do. Next one. At that stage, what I reported was that we were asking for our baseline to be increased by 10 million, and then we got letters from the department to say that a further 2 million will be cut. So in actual fact, you know, our baseline is now down to minus 12. And we have outlined what are some of the things that we will not be able to do with those kind of cuts. Then, did SACWA present its funding challenges to the DA? The answer is yes. And you have seen we have again raised it with the minister when we met. Then, would SACWA be able to implement a policy on misrepresentation of qualifications? Now, this is a conversation, I think, for the NPF bill. We have given our comments in terms of the NPF bill. We did say that, you know, we think that this is going to be a kind of resource-intensive thing. Let me make an example. We have been putting together for all the misrepresented qualifications that we have seen, we put together affidavits and stuff like that, and we give it to the Hawks. And then the person from the Hawks, you know, leaves the thing and so on. And when we follow up, then we need to establish another connection and so on. In fact, yesterday I had a meeting again so that I can again, you know, meet with the relevant people so that, you know, the stuff can move and so on. So what I'm just saying is that, you know, so it is not easy. It is a resource-intensive matter. Also, if we would like to be efficient and effective, then we actually need to look at our infrastructure and all of those kinds of stuff. The other point I also want to make is that we're in an old building. So, you know, we've got a thing called the chiller, you know, that keeps you nice and cool in the summer. And it keeps you cool, nice and warm in the winter. Our chiller, you know, is gone. It is on its last leg. So if we have a very hot hot summer, we're going to be very hot in that building. Next slide. Then what steps have you taken to ensure government debtors pay the outstanding amounts owed to SACWA? We have suspended services of the clients which has got outstanding debt for longer than 30 days. We reported this matter to the Public Service Commission. We reported this to the DHED. And we have now amended our policy to say that if people don't pay, we will give them, we will hand them over to those people that collect debt as a profession. Then the question from the Portfolio Committee, is SACWA aware of the report of a high-level panel on assessment of key legislation and acceleration of fundamental challenges, which recommend the merging of quality councils? Our answer is no. Nobody has spoken to us. We don't know about it. And in fact, we asked whether it's possible to give us a copy of this document that people referred to. Then there was a question about which qualifications were achieved through recognition of prior learning and at what NPF levels, and we've given the information. This was until the 31st of March 2018. So what efforts have you made to derive income from other sources? We said we've reconfigured our pricing model for verification and for evaluation of qualifications, so we charge a little bit more. We are getting to the point where if we increase that fees, you know, it will just become inaccessible, as it were. Then we are now considering charging both private and public institutions for the registration of qualifications. We have also introduced the annual fee for recognized professional bodies. We have a task team that we've set up with them. you know, because there are small professional bodies and there are big professional bodies, and, you know, so we're working out what is the best in terms of a sliding scale for that. So, you know, we try our best, and we save quite a lot of money. Chairperson, whenever we get audited, the auditors don't come and ask and say, but you've saved quite a lot of money here. They just look at things that's wrong, and they call it the F word, findings. Thank you.
Okay, members. Let's see if it goes with you. I suggest before the department makes its comments about this presentation, let's allow members to also participate. I like it when it is, a session is participatory so that you don't keep quiet for a very long time. If it is participatory, it gets you in the involved all the time, and I think it makes you more alert. So let's get members to ask questions, comments, and the department will help SAQA with the responses. Can you raise hands? Professor Pozzoli? Chilen? Marantz? Marantz? Volbar? Oh, I'm leaving out Paul. Sorry. Honorable Bukwa. Yeah, there's another one.
I'm not sure whether going direct into the discussion, but mine was to request on what you have just suggested, that if the members we start engaging on the matter, and thereafter the department, we would be forced to engage after as well, when the department, I would suggest that we let the department also have a take on it, and then we the members come in after as a comprehensive presentation.
Well, the rationale is that when you break it and allow members to participate, it becomes more participatory, because you will get this chance when the department make its comment also. After that, you still get another chance to participate. Second part, yeah. We should have follow-ups. That way you are all the time involved in them.
Okay. It's fine.
Okay. So let's get Pozzoli.
Thanks, Chair. Let me just play devil's advocate on the articulation thing and suggest that there might be a case for stopping doing what you're doing. What you've got in terms of TVETs in universities is you've got two systems that were never designed to articulate. And your way of trying to make them articulate is through persuasion, lots of workshops, you must try harder, a little bit of intervention here and there. And it's a... a method that's actually not going to work in any significant sense of the word unless the two institutions, and particularly the TVETs, change their syllabus and their admissions. And the syllabus is in control of the Department of Higher Education, not SAQA. So it seems that there might be a bit of mission creep here on behalf of SAQA, that you're engaging in a whole lot of things, talking to universities, holding workshops with colleges, which aren't really your job, and actually are the department's job. So, plus you've got no money. So I'm just not sure. And if you look at the numbers of people for whom this a real articulation is working, I'm not talking about moving in a TVET college from one qualification to another. That's not articulation. Serious articulation is moving from a college to a university. And the numbers there are minuscule, absolutely minuscule.
And I would suggest they're going to remain minuscule until something changes in the TVET colleges, because they were never designed to articulate with universities. They don't admit students who have the potential for university. Their syllabus is outdated anyway and is busy being revised. So I'm just wondering whether this isn't a little bit of a feel-good thing to have on your agenda, but really a little bit of a hopeless task. I mean, I am playing devil's advocate because I understand completely what you're trying to do. And it's not that I don't support articulation. I mean, I was very taken with the Taiwanese model when I visited there a couple of years ago and saw that they have full articulation from technical schools to technical colleges to technical universities. It's a very clearly defined pathway that a student can take. But that was at the design level, not at the let's have a workshop level. So unless you're looking seriously at the design of our college system, I don't think what you're doing is really going to produce very significant outcomes. The other thing is, there's a little bit of an irony in what you're doing, because on the one hand you're saying make college qualifications more valuable, but on the other hand you're spending a lot of time trying to make it possible to go from a college to a university, implying that they're not that valuable and you should be going to a university. Nevertheless, I still think, that irony besides, it is very important that there be a pathway for students and they don't just get stuck. My last point is, it's just to do with your budgetary constraints. So how much money are you spending on this articulation effort? And would it not be better spent simply emphasizing your endorsement of courses as being articulation ready? I mean, once you start doing that, then you've built in articulation into the system rather than into the degree to which people feeling like doing it. You're actually building it into the system. And I don't know whether students know that the courses they do are deemed articulation ready by SACWA. They probably don't. And it seems to me that system that you seem to already have embarked upon would be maybe worth elaborating rather than the persuasion route. Thank you.
Thank you. Number two.
Chair, yes, but we are sharing a microphone. Unfortunately, I just had to grab it. Chairperson, thank you very much. Chair, to a certain extent, Honourable Pizzoli has touched on some of the issues of concerns that I have, but I differ quite significantly from the approach that our system was not designed. I believe it was all along, it was a system that was inherited and a sort of a framework that was inherited, and the intention was to adjust it as we went along, to articulate, to have articulation. So my question would be the simplification of the NQF. Apart from deregistering and re-registering, et cetera, is the intention not to say that there's not real significant uptake for specific qualifications and there needs to be adjustment, and who is to fulfill that role? Because that has been a moving target all along. We've been battling with this over the past 4 years, that we don't see a body taking the initiative and making sure that the qualifications actually meet the requirements for further articulation. So I really have a major concern about that. Secondly, Chairperson, I welcome the interesting survey that was conducted, for lack of a better word, and clarity that actually that's part of the problem, that we don't have any serious agreements and commitments in and between institutions. And you know, Chair, it's not only just between colleges and universities. It is also between universities. It is one of those issues that I feel really needs to be addressed, even if it is to be captured in specific policies or whatever, because we have to accept that notwithstanding the fact that universities are institutions that have academic independence, they remain public institutions with the public purse paying quite significant contributions to institutions, and therefore we could direct their interaction with other institutions. And if necessary, I think it must be captured in policy, in legislation, regulations, whatever. But I think there's a need for that. Then, Chairperson, my issue with regards to the funding, yes, I understand that SAQWA is finding it difficult, as all public service institutions are finding it, because the budget cuts were across board. There was no sort of specific target of SAQWA, and we don't underestimate the important role, but whilst we as a committee tried to motivate for further financial resourcing of the institution, there was just no movement to support that, because we all know the economic constraints, and all public entities had to accept what they were given and make it work. So we hope if you make out the case and you fulfill your core mandate, because that brings me to the issue of advocacy campaigns, etc. I'm not convinced that advocacy for advancement and articulation and moving students into the right field of study is part of SAQWA's role. I don't think it is part of the role. I believe there is a significant role for the Department of Basic Education, but I would not like to ask the Department of Higher Education to steer away from that specific function. I think it's crucial that more effort must be made. I do believe that early childhood development is going to play a significant role, but the problem is, and it remains, Chair, and I speak from my feeling within my constituency area, learners from deprived backgrounds simply don't have the exposure to career choices. And there is a role within the public sector, a role for Department of Basic Education, but I would argue, because higher education is directing the post-school system, we are seeing where the failures are in the system. And most of that is inadequate learner support. I fully agree with SAQWA as far as that is concerned, but it's also inadequate direction of learners to make subject choices that would in fact open up further learning opportunities for them. So I'm just concerned about that. I understand that SAQWA is playing a very critical role. Chair, I would like to conclude by asking, and because I could come back later on, SAQWA got a specific responsibility in the public service after the Public Service Commission instructed SAQWA to look at qualifications in the public sector. And my information is that you were awarded specific funding for that exercise. If you could please just confirm or deny that. And then as far as the high-level panel assessment is concerned, that is the Galema Motlanthe panel report, 600 pages. It is available on the internet, quite a significant piece of work, and I think that's very interesting, and it's it should be considered by the SAKWA board. Chair, yes, I just wanted to say that if they are implementing the misrepresentation of qualifications currently, is the additional responsibility of maintaining a register, is it going to be a significant additional burden? Or is it something that could be done through additional, through proper IT systems, you know, because we must remember we're moving into the fourth industrial revolution. I almost said revelation. Revolution. So is it something, or is it something that could be managed once you have identified, you know, that qualification goes onto a central register and anybody could access that, so that people know when they appoint people with misrepresented qualifications, they could in fact report that to the police. Well, that is another matter, obviously, because we see how poorly their walks have performed in many respects recently. But the point is, we must root out this because it is devaluing our qualifications. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think it's about 11:15. Remember, we can go until 12:30. So as you ask questions, monitor yourself in terms of time so that this participatory thing can work. Otherwise, it won't work. Because if you make, like myself, another presentation, when you ask your question, it won't work. So the next person. It was Paul Maran.
Chair, I would reserve my questions up until the department. Mine was to request you to get the department in already.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, we have already decided, but if you want to wait for that, that's fine. I can ask in your place. Sure.
I will replace him. Chairperson, thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for the presentation by members of the
board. Well, after my brother, it will be you, because earlier on it was you, but it has still come after you.
Okay. No, thanks, Chair. I've got three questions. The first question emanates from the enablers. Enabler number two, which has got different structures or what do you call them? For convenience sake, different structures which are placed around the roles of other entities. My question is, don't you think also the community-based organizations could belong to that area, because they play a vital role in our societies, especially in the rural areas. You find that there are those people who volunteer on a daily basis, offering some informal education of some kind. You know, just to check with you as to whether can it be formed part of the organizational structures. Number two relates to the second presentation by Ms. Nidal. Yes. Yeah, she spoke about the registration of qualifications. Now, my question is, if you deregister a certain qualification, only to find that somebody has qualified, has been given certificate on that particular qualification, and now It's no longer relevant. What do you do with the person who qualified for that? And the second question to that, and what informs you to deregister the qualifications? I think I'm one of the unfortunate people because I have been trying to sort of enroll with UNISA at some stage. I was doing public administration and whatnot and governance. In the middle of everything, I was informed with a letter that you no longer continue with that qualifications because it's outdated. Then I ask myself for those courses I have gone through and I passed, well, what is going to happen with me? So you see such things, and sometimes we get frustrations because we do not have the knowledge of what informs the institution to deregister the application. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think being cognizant of time, I won't dwell on the issue of formal articulation and how do you effectively ensure that you've got more suitable... thanks, Chair. I was saying, being cognizant of time, I won't dwell into how we can ensure that we have more effective measures into attaining formal articulation, and also secondly, be cognizant of the fact that we don't want to perpetuate a further status that TVET colleges are secondary to higher institutions of higher learning. Just to be cognizant of that whilst we want to articulate, let's also ensure that we empower that sector. The second one is from the later speaker, just in terms of how do we inform the institutions of the recognition and what criteria is utilized to ensure that the qualification is still relevant, etc. And also, how do we ensure that we can adequately bring that communication to students respectively? I had a case of about 100 young students in PE who were studying something, and in their final year they realized that, in fact, that was no longer recognized. They've wasted 3 years into their lives, and they can't use that qualification. So just an effective method, even ourselves, how in our constituencies we can drive that message and ensure that we inform our people adequately. The last one is in terms of the legal fees. It's a good thing to want to attain and, you know, have a fund, etc. But I want to know what reasonable measures have we taken to ensure that we have capacity internally to be able to curb those challenges. I mean, I think you're quite aware that we always get charged in terms of accreditation, professional bodies, and registration. So what have we done to ensure that beyond getting funds for these legal cases, that we can actually remove the issues that we face on a daily basis? Thanks.
Thank you. Just before
you respond, if I can also just ask two questions. The one is, when you deal with foreign qualifications, this foreign word, what do we mean? Do we just mean from third world or African states, or do we mean internationally foreign also from... Or do we check, for example, a qualification from Oxford University, which is an older university than us, or that is a given, that because it has existed long before we had universities in South Africa, that should be of a higher standard. So if you can just tell me how you deal with this foreign, does it involve first world countries, if you like, the G7, or if you just from third world countries that we would doubt their qualification. The second thing, the issue of articulation, I would expect that because a lot of these TVETs, and we said by nature they must be practical. Now, if they are practical at university, it is more theoretical.
I would imagine that it wouldn't be a lot of students from TVET who want to advance, but you'd get a few students who could be exceptional, who are very good, even theoretically, who would actually match the standard at university. Now, my question is, in terms of the issue of language, have you compared international articulation as to whether if it is German, because they have an advantage of the language from TVET to university, articulation becomes easier perhaps because there the language is the same in all countries, in the first world countries. So what the question I'm asking is, major issues like a language, do they affect this articulation? Which means we've got to look seriously at people at TVET, whether in terms of language they'll match the language in terms of quality of the requirements at university. Thanks. Those are the two. The last one is on the Halima Mutante Commission. Maybe when the department responds, they can just briefly say what intervention is the recommendation they've made helping this situation that we're discussing now. Thanks. I think we can get the responses. Let's get responses from both SAFA, both presenters, and if the department wants to respond also, they are allowed to do so. Does that help you, Mabunda?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Shirley Lloyd from the Department of Higher Education and Training. Just an initial response to the three presentations that were made, and I know that my colleagues will also want to add to some of them. In terms of the articulation, and maybe this will also touch on some of the questions that were asked, but I think the research that SAQA has conducted is a defined research. It's within certain parameters. And it presents a picture of the articulation between the TVET College students to universities of technology. As a department, we deal, and certainly with SAQA and the Quality Councils, we deal with them on a very regular basis with other bigger systemic articulation matters, and I'll give you an example of one or two, where professional bodies are creating barriers for students who come through the TVET college system, who have achieved a national N diploma, which is at NQF level 6, and they do not want to continue to recognize them in professional capacities. One of the examples being the Engineering Council of South Africa, that up until a while ago recognized a TVET college route for professional engineering registration. Now they've closed that route and they do not recognize it. So that's a bigger systemic issue. You have a lot of people caught up now in almost a dead end. So that's a systemic issue that we as a department are working with SAQA and the professional bodies to make sure that those sorts of bigger barriers are removed. And we believe part of the issue, and Professor Bisoli is correct, the curriculum issue, if we look at the construct of qualifications as they are registered on the NQF, they clearly have learning outcomes. Having a look now at how do we align these learning outcomes, how do we bring some kind of alignment from a higher education qualification with the exit level of a TVET? That might be one of the ways that SAQA can make sure that the quality councils do that. That's just one of the ways. So we are cognizant
that articulation is bigger than just TVET into UOTs. That's one of the areas, as I say. The other big area we have mentioned is the narrative, the perception. So whilst we theoretically know that the minister has said articulation should be allowed, we know that when you look at the sub-frameworks, particularly the higher education qualification sub-framework, it clearly states what articulation opportunities are there, and it allows theoretically for the TVET qualifications to articulate, but in practice it's not happening. And so we are urging SACWA, as SACWA's opening statements in their presentation, they have an overarching role. We're urging SACWA to look at a stronger leadership role, maybe. And we know it's difficult. I have full sympathy with SACWA because you've got three quality councils that are quite independent and want to pursue their route. But we are saying, SACWA, we're wanting to strengthen your hands to be able to provide leadership and guidance around these very difficult articulation issues, so that when a quality council designs its qualifications, it's not just theory but practice, and that they actually encourage the articulation to happen. We're finding another big barrier in articulation challenges, and we've raised it with SACWA, and we want SACWA to take further leadership and to advise us in this area, and that's in the workplaces. We know we are seeing a significant pushback from the mining industry, as an example, which has decided for some strange reason that TVET college graduates who came through the old routes for qualification as apprentices artisans, suddenly they are and their trade certificates, they do not want those people to be employed in the industry anymore. And this is a serious matter of articulation into good jobs, careers, promotion. So we're asking SACWA those issues. So beyond the research chair, we believe that we are asking SACWA to assist. Now, we know when you ask for people to do things, funding should follow. And so we need to have a look at how SACWA looks at its research projects and what the budget for the research projects would be, and how we can, if there is additional funding required, a clear business case can be made for the greater good of our citizens in the country. So in terms of articulation, we're very appreciative of the baseline study. We must say the methodology, all of those things, we are very appreciative that it's there. We believe it can. We need to go further collectively and collaboratively. When we come to the simplification, chair of the NQF, we've just recently concluded a two-year study in partnership with the DPME on the evaluation of the implementation of the NQF Act. And there are 19 recommendations that flow from that, which show clear systemic challenges. And those will be coming through the cluster and eventually to Cabinet. But it shows that the current structure and constructs and relationships and reporting lines are confused and create financial as well as reporting strain, so the two are connected. And we believe that whilst the ministerial guidelines certainly set out the requirement for simplification, we know that the white paper for post-school education and training clearly, chapter 9, virtually the first paragraph speaks simplification. It speaks getting rid of the proliferation of qualifications. As a department, our concern lies in the fact that the CHE has indicated 31 December 2019 is the cut-off close-off date for the alignment of all qualifications the need for realignment. In the same breath, the CHE is telling us that they don't know if they'll be able to meet their obligations due to lack of funding. SACWA is the body that overarchingly has to look after the NQF and the greater good, and I'm coming back to the greater good of the individual, the taxpayers, the people who keep me in my job and probably this row of people here in their jobs along here. I have
As a department, we have significant concerns about those definites, and we really urge SACWA to assist us in this regard. How are we going to make sure people are not left, institutions are not left without anybody to turn to? So the simplification, while we recognize SACWA is doing a really good job and we get the reports, we're urging this is a particular concern issue, and we and these underpin some of the legal cases that are pending where providers, particularly private providers and even some public ones, are saying we are worried, nothing's happening, time's going to run out and we will be disadvantaged. So a simplification of the NQF is more than just the proliferation to remove that. It's also clear reporting lines. It's simplifying systems. It's simplifying the removing duplication across the system. There's a lot of wastage, we believe, there. And so we're asking, and we certainly are writing to SACWA in this regard. And we have what we call that improvement plan based on our NQF evaluation research, which clearly sets our timetables for that. So we believe as a department we're taking it seriously. We're asking SACWA to assist, and we are asking them to look at the issues I'm raising. The third area in terms of funding, and we recognize that budgets are tight. We have indicated that to SACWA. We are very pleased that as a short-term measure, we agree, short-term measure, that donor funding could be considered for some of the items. We are again asking SACWA, and we will, I have the commitment from our CFO, that our CFO's office, together with the other SACWA and the 3QC CFO's offices, will sit together and have a look at a sustainable 5-year business plan for funding. And it will be interrogative, it will be deep and wide, and it will look at what functions each are performing. One of our colleagues, the honorable members, mentioned, are we duplicating, should it be SACWA's job? And maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe the things that are done shouldn't be done there. So we are, as a department, very committed, specifically through our branch, very committed with the CFO to tackle this nettle, which has been around, and we want real facts, empirical evidence. We want to look at who does what with whom, and we want to come up with a very clear business plan that can be presented to the portfolio committee and that can be presented further. So, Chair, that's from my side, from the department's initial response. My colleagues would possibly add. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further response from both the department and staff?
Chair, I think Dr. Lloyd addressed the concerns of the department.
I think Dr. Lloyd addressed the concerns of the department, and I don't think there's anything there at this point in time.
Any further response from staff to the question?
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me first of all start by saying thank you very much to the committee members for all these wonderful questions. Let me start with the easy one, the Motlanthe report. We were not aware that this was the Motlanthe report, so we will now go and get it. Also, thank you very much for pointing us to the wonderful internet. We will do so. We'll read it, and, you know, we will comment on it and so on. The second one is that the question about the enablers. I think the suggestion about community-based organizations, I think it's a good suggestion. probably our Bitcoin was saying there, you know, we spoke about NGOs and so on. So, you know, that was the broad category, but we will put in community-based organizations also. Then the understanding of deregistration. Deregistration doesn't mean that if a qualification is now deregistered, those people who have got the qualification, you know, that we forget about them and we've got to forget about the qualification, because that qualification will be forever on the national certificate database. And so because we track, you know, all of these things. And let me also say it's a kind of normal way in which one deals with qualifications, because some qualifications come, they get created and they go, you know, and we make sure that we keep track of, you know, all of them. In fact, the fact that we've got the National Qualifications Framework is a guarantee, in fact, to the nation that, you know, we will not forget those things. I mean, in the past, you know, there wasn't this kind of central register or repository in the way that we have. Now, then let me talk about at the university level, where I know that there are quite a number of courses, you know, because courses need to change and so on, and people have got a particular period in which they need to achieve the qualification, and very often the institutions say, you know, look, this thing is going to be phased out in so many years, so you need to finish it within that period. So my understanding, in fact, is that if you have gained modules, that, you know, that cannot be taken away, and so there must be acknowledgement that you have got those particular modules and so on. In fact, we've got a system where we record all the modules that people have, you know, that people have completed. So what I would like to suggest is that if you send us a, we've got a mechanism where individual learners can ask the question, so what have you got on the database of me? You know, I mean, I'll give you the details afterwards, and you can send it in, and we can see, you know, what details we've got with you and so on. Now, this is where the other thing comes in, where if a university is saying, look, this has been phased out, they must also be able to say to you, but these are the kind of routes that you can go, you can do this, you can do that, so that there's different opportunities and options given to the learner. So in essence, I'm saying, you know, we actually need to find ways in which we can deal and communicate better around this matter. The question about articulation and whether we should stop it, I think, was it the devil's advocate that raised that particular issue. And I think the chairperson also had spoken about these are different systems, they have different purposes and all of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, changes needs to be made at the program level, I think. Now, if one looks at the articulation policy, it makes that point, as it were. And I gave an example where one university actually had worked with TVET colleges, and, you know, and through that particular way, they've been able to then say, we will recognize this stuff, you know, your program needs to change in this way, and this is how it will articulate with the program at the university level. So what I'm saying, there are those kind of clear examples there. I also want to say, I think the point about the Taiwanese model is an interesting one and so on. In fact, I visited China a few years ago, and they also have got a fantastic way. In fact, what they were doing is they invited quite a number of people to come and have a look at the model that they've developed. And some of the stuff that they've done where, you know, you have the school, you have the TVET college, then you have a university, and all of them are both very close to each other. So you can literally, you know, you can literally walk into the place, you go to the school, you go to the TVET college, you go to the university and so on. And then they also have linked, you know, they also link industry, you know, to that. So there are different models in the world that one can look at, and I do think that That is quite important. I should say, though, that what I haven't emphasized in this presentation, I mentioned it, is that articulation at the systemic level certainly is there, where we are saying this qualification leads to this one. So it is there. We've done it. And as I said, the key thing is about implementation on the ground. That is where, you know, the issue is that we're dealing with. Then the next question for me is about, I think it also falls within this idea of what I think people spoke about as mission drift. Now, these things that, you know, certainly the stuff that I'm talking about, it is, you know, we can continue, and we do it, we operate at the policy level. But I think a lot of the issues that people are raising here has got to do with implementation. So, I mean, we can come to the portfolio committee and we can say we've done our work. You've asked us to do these policies, and I will read it here, that's in the Act. We have done it. So when you raise the kind of issue about the implementation here, the implementation, then we will say, it's not, you know, don't talk to us. You know, talk to whoever you might talk to. So I think there's always this kind of debate about, so here you have policy, and the policy must be implemented. So how do you ensure that policy gets implemented? What is your monitoring and evaluation and so on? You know, so I'm saying we can, you know, it is that kind of debate in a way that we can have. And now, the question is, should SACPA be involved with advocacy? The Act says that one of the things that SACPA must do with respect to other matters, it says inform the public about the interest. Now, if we don't inform the people about the interest, in fact, many people come to us and say, you know, these ones don't know about that, they don't know about that, they don't understand this, they don't understand that. So, you know, so if the message is don't inform people about the interest, then, you know, I'm saying that it is a legislative injunction that we have. And maybe we shouldn't speak about it as advocacy. We should say we are informing the public about the NQF. Maybe that's the mistake that we make. So I will certainly, you know, we will think about that. But we believe that part of what we're doing is to make it, we inform the public, we make it easier for the public to understand, you know, a new system and so on. But my honest belief is that we are not doing things that is not in the Act. With regard to foreign qualifications, Mr. Kekana, we evaluate all qualifications, whether it is from Oxford, whether it's from Cambridge. It doesn't matter what bridge, they must cross this particular qualification evaluation bridge. And we, you know, we don't discriminate against developing countries or third world countries and first world countries. We evaluate all qualifications, because what we're doing, we first check, is this an authentic qualification? So in other words, the institution, is it recognized in the country of origin? Number two, is this institution authorized to offer this qualification and award the qualification? And then, was this qualification given to this person? We do all of that without fee or favor. Chairperson, I think then The point about the broader issues, in fact, I did gave an overarching thing to say, these are all the things that we are busy doing and so on. And the reason why we are focused on the particular thing, you know, dealing with Tibet colleges and, you know, and the kind of linkages there and so on, is because we believe that this was this is an area that, you know, that the minister is particularly concerned about, and there are, you know, kind of general issues there and so on. With regard to simplification, you know, if we have a difference of opinion in terms of what simplification is, you know, I'm very happy to have a discussion with the department so that we can clarify that. And that is one of the reasons why, you know, we've got the definition so that, you know, people can see what is it that we mean when we speak about it. And, you know, we can then find ourselves around that. The issue about the 31st of December. Chairperson, one of the things that the NCFO does, it says that the quality, one of the things that the NCFO Amendment Bill does, it actually strengthens, you know, SACWA's role, because the NCFO Act clearly says that, you know, SACWA needs to develop policy and criteria. And then the quality councils, when they develop policy and criteria, they need to take that in consideration, but the Act does not compel the quality councils to consult SACWA about it. It says that these quality councils can go directly to the minister and so on. The 19th of December was one of those. We saw this 19th of December deadline together with everybody else. And so the NCFO Act Amendment Bill, Act Amendment Bill, yes, it actually says that the quality councils must develop policy in consultation with SACWA. So, you know, so I think that thing will be strengthened with regard to that. But at the moment, as we are sitting here, the quality councils can formulate something, they can pass it through the minister. They don't have to consult SACWA. So again, I would like to say that we need to be cognizant that quality councils have got particular rights, they've got particular powers, and we need to work within that. And Member Bazzoli is correct, you know, that a lot of the stuff that we do the policy stuff, we do that, and then it's about persuasion. You know, so we try to do all of those kinds of stuff. I think I have... Yeah, I don't want to, you know, deal with, you know, all the funding things and so on. You know, I take the point about what, you know, it is about the future and, you know, all of those kinds of stuff. So, you know, I think I will pause in terms of that. The last point for me is about the register. You know, I'm not too sure that the Act is only asking us to just maintain a register. And even if one talks about maintaining a register, it is not a simple task to maintain a register. Because there's a lot of work that is underneath that, that one needs to do. So, and even if one takes the example of, you know, can't we just put a piece of software together and so on, of course the answer is yes, you can. But you need to have, you know, you need to have seed money to be able to put the, you know, software together, and it must be maintained and so on. And you get version 1 and version 1.2 and version 3 and version 6 and so on, you know. So I'm just saying it is not, it looks, you know, easy and so on. A matter that I will address next week is also the difference between a register of misrepresented qualifications and a register of fraudulent qualifications. Because there's a difference. And there's a particular reason why that difference, because we had to consult with the legal people and so on. You cannot just put a register of misrepresented qualifications and people attached to that in the public domain. You know, there's a whole process that we need to go through, because, you know, we live in a constitutional democracy after all. You need to give people the right to reply, all of the kind of stuff that goes there. So I'm just saying, you know, we need to just, we will speak a lot about that next week, but to say that it is going to require a bit more resources. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Let me be guided at this stage by members. What do you want us to do? Do we ask the department? They were responding to questions. Now they can respond to the whole presentation made by SAFA, so that Honorable Paul Marans gets his chance to ask the department his question. What do you want me to do? Do we continue with follow-up questions? Yes.
Chair, yes. I think I'm okay in asking at the moment, because and I'm not saying the department must not have a bite on it, but in their response, it seems or it looks to me that they were actually already interacting with the presentation, and unless I'm out of order for that.
No, that's fine. You can continue.
There are three issues that I wanted to check between the department and SAFA, and it's because of the brief that we sent them is to give us a brief on implementation of the articulation, the simplification, and the financial issues regarding to that. And I think those were the three points in the main. And I would want to assume that the biggest challenge of all is actually the funding part across all what they have articulated. And that has been, to some extent, been dealt with. If I take it from the bottom, the presentation to indicate there were some meetings with the department, the minister. There were questions raised about additional funding and so on, and I think although it might not be to their satisfaction and or their need, it is sufficiently dealt with, and the department should apply their mind to it, specifically the minister. And for the reason that as we add to the mandate that SACOM must deal with, it would be unfair to not think that there should also be resources. And there's an acknowledgement from the department that indeed they are in discussions, and there are immediate responses to that, and that's where they spoke about seed funding. However, when you and that is dealing with the financial aspects. At the right time, when those fundings are being dealt with, I think they would also be brought to the committee, and then we would see how far they can go with what has been availed. The survey or research that was done on the slides shows that in terms of articulation, there are where there are agreements, understandings. There are those where you have some loose agreements. There are those where they call it latent. And when you look at it, it means there is something in that direction. It is not that there is nothing. And which takes me to the question of the enablers, where you have the enabler 1 up to 3, which is talking about a lot of collaboration. Because if it's not enjoined in as far as the acts are concerned and compelling them, somebody must do something, and I think it is in the right direction to start the conversations and to have agreements so that nothing is lost between that. So
I want to appreciate the work that has already been done on that matter, but I would want to encourage, as a member of the committee, the continuous engagement, especially with all stakeholders, including the private sector, where you find all these qualifications running short of having the recipients being on the job or being in a specific career. You just take what is going to happen with people at Impala Mines, who have been part and parcel of the TVET in Rustenburg, the Orbit, who I have seen literally going to school, getting their qualifications. Well, there were problems about what do they do after that, because there were no places where they can do the training part. But when they lose their job now, and there is no way of directing them, the career pathing has actually stopped. So the collaboration with the private sector becomes more important, and that is one thing that is also being captured within your enablers. So that was my take on it. The important part was, we might be talking amongst the institutions, but at the end of the day, what happens to those people with the different qualifications without the parting? And they had a consultative, I don't know what the conference, which came out with resolutions, and those resolutions capture what we have already been saying about the meeting, about making it simplified, about advocacy or information. And I think there is some convergence. I would want to be hard on consultation and consultation until it's done. Even if you come back 3, 4, 5 times to the committee for the same thing, we should take it in good breath that it is part and parcel of what needs to be done, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much,
Julie,
are there questions?
One question, Jay. Just in practice, if UNISA qualifications become dead ends, they no longer recognised for some other peculiar reason, is it because it's not a contact university or whatever, what is the role of SAQWA? And what is the role of the Council for Higher Education? And maybe I can say, what is the role of the department? That, because clearly that is also one of those articulation errors that we need to overcome. Now, if I look at SAQWA's mandate, you know, it is very wide, and I think it needs some sort of fine tuning, because the interaction, Chairperson, between SAQWA and the Quality Council are very important. And I'm not convinced, if we look at it at present, there's a clear sort of, well, I see it as a diagram of the one reporting to the other, etc. The question is, do Quality Councils see it like that? Is the Council for Higher Education willing to be reporting on what their interventions are with UNISA? Etc. Because it's the unsuspecting public, Chairperson, that are taking time and effort to enroll, and only to find that their qualifications don't lead them anywhere. So please, if we can just have some comment, maybe from the department and from SAQWA. Thanks.
Thank you, Judy. Professor Belinda Pozzoli.
I wanted to say, I mean, the other thing that has this process is that there's a portfolio committee. We're not just here to question, but what is important is we should also make suggestions about how we think things are done. This is because when Honorable Belinda Pozzoli made that asked the question of whether TVET colleges
properly aligned with university? Are they in terms, I think it will help if we say, look, in terms of curriculum, this is what we think should change. And we should be open because we've got kind of, because of our past, different type of TVET colleges in South Africa. And we should see what we think will help the situation so that we kind of help in the process by building ideas into what SAQA and department is trying to do. Because I think everybody must ultimately be given an opportunity. If later in life he wants to go to university, though he comes from TVET, he should be given that opportunity to improve his own life. So I think if we make those suggestions, that will help the process a great deal. Because we all have our own different experiences from this, and in a sense we are experts in the field of education. So you show, Professor Pozzoli, you don't want to make suggestion about how TVET's articulation can be properly aligned.
Thank you. Yes, I did make a suggestion, but maybe it got lost in all the rhetoric about the devil's advocate and all that. But what I was saying was, in fact, the department is busy rejigging the curriculum of the TVET. And I'd like, you know, how seriously are they taking the question of articulation there? Because what should be happening, if you really want those TVETs to articulate with universities, is that the new curriculum should be done in collaboration with the same universities who are being asked to admit the students, so that they can then look at the new curriculum and say, wow, if this student does this, then they will be able to be admitted to our course. And to me, I was sort of saying a bigger structural thing needs to be done about the TVETs rather than the very time-consuming and possibly expensive sort of emotional effort that SAQA is putting into persuasion rather than structure. So that was really what I was suggesting.
Mabunda and Fulkwa and Mabunda.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. I think the one thing I left out after my question was that with regards to the program that I enrolled with UNISA, was that after I passed some modules, I was told that you can't carry this, the ones that we have passed, through to another one. So, but I understand that, you are given a certain period of time to complete your, some of us are slow learners, and maybe we do not cope with the fastness of the learning, since UNISA is not a contact university. Mm. So we get lost in between, and so I think maybe we need to be told in time to say, and of course this is how things should go, so that it must not be me alone who doesn't have that information. So I think I appreciate that the advice you gave me, Mr. Samis. I think it will help me and others as well. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. I think for me, it's just maybe if we could draft an interim legal framework between now and the 31st of December, and how we can deal with some of these immediate challenges. And I think without hesitation, I can make a submission to SAQA, which is written and properly articulated. Just point of clarity, I know Mr. Joe said you'd respond to some funding issues next week. So if you could just get confirmation that you're coming back next week or there'll be written responses to those questions.
Just the last quick one from
the South African Council of Engineering. I'm concerned that there are qualifications of engineering that they say maybe because of quality not recognized, but also other issues of policy, like I'm sure we are all aware, this is the past, the gender issue that they were saying they don't think women are, if I understood it clearly, naturally fitted to be engineers. And this was a big issue in the media. The media debated it more than us who are, according to government, given the responsibility to make sure that those type of prejudices are not part of our life. So I just want to know from department at the SAUCA whether when the issue of qualifications are raised in industry, in an institution that actually fit into being a linkage between training and educating institution and industry like South African Council of Engineers, we are able to advocate push off according to the law to go back to that board council and say, look, what you're doing is actually illegal. I mean, how far are we able to influence the changes that must take place within very important institution like South African Council of Engineers? Can allow both SAUCA and the department. Maybe the department must go first.
Dr. Lloyd.
Thank you, Chair. I think Advocate Bosa will answer the legal question, and then I will follow on from that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the issue of the statement by the Engineering Council is obviously a matter that must be considered, and it is also important that when we deal with it, we must also get the advice and the direction and the, from the minister in that regard. So the matter is under consideration, but we have not engaged with them as yet.
Thank you, Chair. Just to illustrate a little bit from what the writing from the Engineering Council was, and again, I think this raises the very important point about empirically based evidence that informs decisions and assumptions that inform decisions. In the writings from the Engineering Council that we've received, it's not sufficiently empirically based. It is a sense that they, and that's why we need more evidence from them. It's a sense that they have that the quality of teaching and learning and assessment taking place in the TVET colleges has dropped. The second thing they say is they are not 100% sure that when the students exiting at NQ at N6 and going into their 24 months practical in a company, that is sufficiently assessed or monitored. So based on what they think is happening, they feel that it's unlikely that they will continue, and in fact not unlikely, they have stopped registering these people on a pathway towards becoming professional engineers. everything they say might be correct, but we need empirical evidence and we need examples, etc. Up until that point, it in fact contradicts the rights almost of these people to continue in a career path that has always been there. So it's that type of thing that we're asking. We do know that our erstwhile minister, Dr. Bladen Zamandi, was very clear about requesting SACWA to assist him to remove what he called hindrances and barriers from the professional bodies. And so this is one of those elements. Thank you, Chair.
Any further?
Let me just answer a couple of questions quickly. Chair, the question about whether the quality councils accept the role that SACWA plays. As I said, in terms of the Act, we need to coordinate the sub frameworks. The management of those sub frameworks is the responsibility of the Quality Council. Now, the way that we are doing the coordination is that we've got a meeting of the CEO committee, which consists of SACWA and the Quality Councils, and there's the NQF steering committee, the departmental steering committee that consists of the Department of Education and the Department of Basic Education, as it were. And we reported on a number of the subcommittees that we've established and so on. We also track, what is happening in terms of implementation. And when there are particular kinds of issues, we try to deal with it. And then there's also a set of regulations that deals with how do we deal with conflict. It's a conflict resolution set of regulations that the Department of Higher Education that put in place. And then flowing out of that, we developed what we call a system of collaboration, so that, it is not just a focus on when there's conflict that you try to sort the thing out, but, in a proactive way, you try to set structures in place so that, you can prevent a problem before it actually arises, as it were. Now, but if there are conflicts between SACWA, between quality councils, what the system of collaboration makes provision for is that SACWA can intervene to try to sort out, the problem. And there are kind of three stages, the final stage is that, that you set up a kind of arbitration thing and so on and so forth. Similarly, if there is a conflict between SACWA and the Quality Council, then the department is meant to come in and to, try to resolve the matter. At the same time, Chairperson, I think, again, for me, it's about, having a deep understanding of what this Act says that we can do and that we can't do. And sometimes, I get the feeling that, if one looks at this, that, that SACWA is seen that we can do certain things, that it is not possible. Let me again make the example of the 31st of December, which we discussed at the last CEO committee meeting. The CHE is saying that that the Act is requiring them to do accreditation, and so they, so that's what they must do. Because if they don't do accreditation, the system essentially, I'm not sure what happens to it, but it is a major issue. And they're saying that we cannot do this kind of stuff unless we've got sufficient resources to do it. So then the question is, okay, so if you can't, they would like to make sure that, that this date of the 31st of December, that people and the institutions work towards that. And in fact, as I said, that decision of the 31st of December was a decision that was taken by the minister when the CHE had given, put forward a document with regard to that. So it was declared by the minister. So we are now at a situation where they are saying, yes, we want to implement this, but we don't have resources. And in fact, the department is saying, to SACWA, you know, try and sort out this thing. So, you know, so what I'm saying, that, you know, that becomes the, you know, the issue. You know, just to link this to the other question, I said next week there will be, as I understand it, the hearings in terms of the NPF amendment bill. It is there that, you know, we will deal with the issues in terms of what the amendments that have been proposed. You know, that's what I was referring to, that we will deal with. And, you know, there was a little bit of a crossover here because we were saying, and the question that was posed to us was, in terms of implementing what is in the amendment bill, whether, you know, whether we could do it, and so on, and I responded to that. So hopefully we'll be able to go into much detail in terms of that discussion, next week. I also want to, I think a question that I didn't address in the first round was the issue of legal costs. Now, we are removing the underlying causes. There are some things that we can remove and there are other things that we can't. So when it comes to changes in legislation, we can't change that, but we can make proposals. And so, you know, so when we discuss the bill next week, we will come with proposals to say that there needs to be clarity in terms of accreditation. And who does what, and so on. So that is one of the causes, you know, that we need to address, and so on. But what we try to make sure within SACWA is to make sure that we do the things according to the law, and you know that we process the stuff properly, and we answer things, and you know all of those kinds of stuff. But when there are, you know, kind of legal facts, I mean. Let me give you one example. There was a court case where we've been cited as a respondent, where somebody took the professional body to court. Now, it is SACWA's responsibility to assign a level, credits and so on the NQF. We also have got the evaluation function, but the professional body, the Health Professions Council, has got a similar responsibility where they can evaluate the qualification and they can allocate or they can recognize a qualification in whole or in part as equivalent to a South African qualification. So that's in the Act. We can't change that. You know, it is something that the legislature need to sort out.
Okay, we will allow a deputy chairperson, Professor Howie, to make a contribution. After, we'll then allow the Department of Taloy to make closing remarks, and I think we'll come to the end of the meeting. Members, are you satisfied with your contribution? Okay, sure.
Thank you, Chair, for allowing me the indulgence of making a few words here. I should preface my remarks by saying that my contribution in this light is in view of having been involved with the quality of education over the last 25 years, firstly as a researcher and then in terms of working, doing my research on school level in terms of quality, but also in terms of being on the Omelusi Assessment and Standards Committee for 10 years, the University of South Africa Admissions Committee, and now SACWA in the last couple of years. And with that hat on, I just want to emphasize, with that hat, those hats, the comments about the TVET college sector and the concerns that are being raised perhaps by the Engineering Council warrant a very close look at what has been happening, if I look, I've seen empirical data in terms of the quality of the examinations and the quality of the implementation of those examinations, and in fact the marks themselves. And those marks themselves show at different times a decline where there is a common examination. So I would really encourage the DHET also to go back and have a look at that, look at those the data which they would have, and call for a further deeper analysis of it, because I believe that there may be some truth in what is being said about quality and concerns that are being raised. With my SACWA hat back on my head, I just would like to say that the board has been really concerned at how the resources are being stretched and overstretched and the demands being put on the SACWA staff over the last couple of years, with the resourcing constraint currently, and in fact the budget cut that occurred when in fact an increase was in terms of the motivations put forward, in terms of all the data we had seen was warranted, has really put pressure on the system. The call to get involved with the misrepresentation and fraudulent certificates is, as we know, I think all of us will recognize the invaluable role that could be played. But if I, as an analyst and somebody who's worked extensively with data and databases, I have both the insight into the SACWA processes but also my experience, a considerable amount of resources needs to be put in if you're going to get the system right the first time round. Knowing from the university side, with my university hat on, how the university is depending on SACWA to do a good job in this regard, is really a concern if we are thinking that those resources are not available as we speak. So the call would really come to have a good look at the areas that SACWA is prioritizing and has prioritized, and to go back to say, in view of the fact that if no money is coming, where are the priorities going to lie? Because clearly the staff cannot carry on as they are currently carrying that load. So something will give, and it should not be quality. So just thank you, Chair, for that indulgence, but I really want to support that call to have a look and also at the priorities. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Just before the department makes closing remarks, I was going to understand that the high-level Khalifa report is in particular looking at the TVET system, and they've called on TVET experts to come and advise as part of what they are doing, to come and advise about how the TVET system can be changed systematically and otherwise in any other fashion that they think can help the system, the TVET system, work for us. Department, I can't remember what you said, whether you're still going to read the report or you've got an idea of how it has actually suggested to help the situation of TVET. Maybe when you make your closing remarks, you can comment on that. If you are not ready, please next time, if you can get a full report about the Karima report.
Thank you very much, Chair. Closing comments. None of the colleagues from the department have seen the Motlanthe report. We certainly will get hold of the copy, read it, and I'm sure the colleagues that are need to respond will definitely do so. Just in closing, Chair, I think from the department side, we view SACWA as an apex body, that we take very seriously a statement in the white paper on post-school education and training in Chapter 9, which says the NQF overarches the entire education and training system of South Africa. So we take that very seriously. We take a next sentence very seriously, and the South African Qualifications Authority is the body that has to ensure the further development and implementation. We recognize it and we take it seriously. We also recognize the resource constraints that have regularly and repeatedly been raised, and we have provided the commitment that over the next few months there will be a concerted effort together with the CFO's office of the department as well as the CFOs of SACWA and the three quality councils, which was a message conveyed to Mr. Samuels by myself and the deputy director in the NQF directorate, to say we are committed to working on this plan that has started being developed, but we will finalize it and have a look in a very real way across the whole system. So we are committed to that, Chair. We also committed, I know through our branch, acting DDG, to look at donor funding for a short term. We recognize that that is not sustainable, but at least it will help to set up certain systems and structures. So you have that commitment, Chair, from the department. We have every support, and Advocate Bosoff would be able to speak for himself there. Every support at every possible point from legal services to interrogate and look and provide the legal counsel and advice required. Maybe not necessarily as a formal legal service, but certainly in terms of advising through committee structures. So we do recognize they are significant, as Professor Howie said. That's why I was saying it could be that what Engineering Council and others are saying is true, and we need to have that deep interrogation with the empirical evidence presented, and the minister can make decisions. So from the department side, I think we appreciate SACWA. However, we do perform a monitoring and evaluation role, and we're not apologetic where we have to request SACWA or the quality councils to align themselves with how the minister views the issues, and we encourage them to provide their fullest support to the ministerial guidelines, implementation thereof, to make sure that the system works, because when the minister publishes those, she is publishing what she is viewing as government strategic imperatives and priorities for the NQF system. And that's from my side a closing comment, and my colleagues might want to add. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Okay. Any addition from colleagues? Thank you very much, and I must also personally thank Julie for pointing out the internet availability of the Halima report. I wasn't even aware myself that it is such a lengthy 600 pages. Thanks very much for pointing out to us, and members, thank all of you individually. Thank also to the department and to SACWA. I think I found the meeting fruitful. I can only hope you also found it fruitful. This is the end of our. Thank you.